The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Investor Spotlight, which features episode 147, Donovan Adesoro. Donovan, at the time of this episode, had developed 8 duplexes and he's planning on doing more. But this episode is all about how he started with the first property in his story. So without any further ado, Donovan Adesoro, episode 142, the Black Real Estate Dialogue Investor Highlight. Let's get into it.
How did you find and fund that first lot or piece of land where you wanted to develop one?
Yeah, so man, that first one was such a grind. So once I had all the pieces put together in terms of like the prices, so I had the land, I had the construction cost, I had, you know, what it's going to sell for, I had what I wanted to build. I put it all together in a presentation, kind of same way you do in high school or in college, you know, throw it in Google Slides. I don't think I could afford PowerPoint at the time. So I had it all together. I was like, okay, I got to find someone who has the money because I don't have the money to buy the land or the money to find, you know, even put the down payment. So it was challenging because I went to just about everybody I knew who I thought had money, you know, whether it be coworkers, people, other investors that I knew, and pretty much all of them are like, you know, it sounds good, but like, you know, catch me on the next one, right? They didn't want to be the guinea pig, understandably so. And so I was reaching out to all these different people on real estate Facebook groups. Bigger Pockets Facebook group was one of them. Another one was like some apartment investing Facebook group. And just basically, again, this is like not what you're supposed to do, you know, sending out investor presentations. Like, I don't think that's allowed. But at the time, right, again, I didn't know anything, right? You don't know any better. So, but as I was going through these Facebook groups, I would particularly look for people who were investing or interested in investing out of state, because that told me they were okay with not having eyes on their property all the time. And so I knew that was like a starter for them potentially wanting to invest with me, because now they got someone boots on the ground. It can make them feel a little bit better about out-of-state investing rather than, so if they're in California and they buy a property in Kansas City, they're just hoping the property manager is just taking care of it. Whereas in my case, they got someone, me, boots on the ground that they're texting, calling, can talk to. And so basically after getting like 50 plus, 60 plus no's, I finally get the one who's like, okay, I'll do it. Now, mind you, I had to give out pretty much, I think like 70, 75% of the profit to get this done. But again, you got to do what you got to do to get started. So gave up almost all the profit. He funded the land. And then we closed on the construction loan. And then so that the construction was 100% financed. And then, yeah, off to the races from there. Once I got the first investor, leverage that to get more investors and whatnot.
Got it. For that particular project, did you just need that one investor in construction loan? Was that sufficient, or did you have to raise more money?
Yeah. So for that, for each deal, I really only needed the one investor. At the time, I think the amount I needed was maybe like 60,000. I think the land was going to be like 40-ish, and then an extra 10 for plans and permitting, and then like a 10 kind of contingency sort of thing. So yeah, just 60,000. It could have came from multiple investors, but in this case, it just came from one.
Got it. So for a construction loan, when you're trying to develop a property, how does that process work?
Yeah, so there's really two ways you can go about it. You can buy the land in cash, and then the construction lender would basically cash you out of the land. So for example, you buy the land for 40 grand and construction lenders at the time were covering we'll just say 50% for easy numbers. They're covering 50% of the land. So they would give you back 50% of the land value at closing of the construction loan. So you get 25 grand back, obviously take out closing costs. Maybe you net 10, 15 grand. The other option is to have the lender finance the land on the purchase. So they would cover 50% of the purchase. So if you're buying the land for 50,000, they're coming in with 25, you're coming in with 25 plus closing costs. So, and they wrap in the construction portion into that as well. So they'll cover a portion of the land plus all the construction generally.
Got it. So it sounds like a couple ways to go about it. And are these banks? Are these individuals? How does that part of it work as well?
Yeah. So you can go, I guess there's really two, probably the biggest ways are going through a bank or going through a hard money lender. So banks obviously are going to be cheaper. So less maybe fees, lower interest rate. The caveat there is you have to bring more money. So instead of that you bringing maybe 25 grand to closing, maybe you have to bring 40. So, maybe 20, 30% more money or more cash needed versus a hard money lender. They're going to be more expensive, a little more fees, but you have to bring less cash. So at the time on the first one, to really mitigate the risk, we ended up going with the bank, right? Just to, again, there's so many things I didn't know and it was so potentially risky. We just went with the bank to keep the interest rate low, put more money in and just, went that route.
Got you. How does the bank qualify you in a situation like this? I mean, I'm assuming it's different than if you were getting property, a house hack. What is that process? What are some differences between getting a construction loan for development and getting a mortgage loan, for instance?
Yeah, good question. So on a new construction or fix and flip, something like this, it's going to be more of a commercial loan. So commercial meaning they're going to want to generally lend to an LLC or some sort of entity, a corporation, whatnot, some sort of entity, not just you and your personal name. So that's one. The benefit of that is obviously it's not going to go on your credit, right? So if anyone's wondering, well, how do all these developers get all these loans? None of these are on our credit. So if I get 50 construction loans, none of those go on my credit. So that's key. So it's not affecting your DTI. They don't really care about, again, any debt you have, so to speak. They'll just really qualifying more so the deal rather than you as the borrower. They're qualifying you, make sure your credit's decent and whatnot, but that's a big one. And then the other one is on these commercial loans, you can't live in it. So you have to explicitly sign a document that says you won't occupy it. So some people say, you can refinance later into your own mortgage, but while you're building it, you obviously can't live in it, just to be clear. And then the other thing is because it's commercial and it's not on your credit, you pay for that and typically a higher rate. So let's say your home loan is at, nowadays it's at 6.5%, a commercial construction loan is going to be 7.5. So you probably expect to pay another 100 basis points or 1% higher, than what your current mortgage is on the rate, at least.
Got it. So you got the loan from the lender and you got the construction loan. This is your first development. What did you do? Did you have a plan? What happened from there?
Yeah, good question. So kind of not really, no. So really, I still remember the day when we closed on the land. I was like, oh my gosh, he actually sent the money. He wired the 40 grand for us to close on the land. I was just in shock. I was like, okay, I guess we're doing this. And so then it was just kind of full steam ahead with I had put a plan to place in the beginning. And it obviously that goes well until you get kind of punched in the mouth or something else comes that surprises you. So in this case, we just followed what I'd originally planned in terms of I knew the rough square footage of what I wanted to build. So we bought the land. I sent the survey kind of closing docs to the architect. And that way he can work on fitting the duplex or whatever structure you want to build onto the land. And then from there, he'll send it to you saying, hey, everything looks good. I'm like, yep, looks good. Go ahead and submit it to the city. So it was nice to be able to outsource some of those things, because if I were to do it, again, me trying to figure it out is just kind of a waste of time. So outsource that, the plans and permitting. And then while we're waiting on that, we're kind of arranging the financing, because in our case, we had bought the land in cash. So we didn't close on the loan until we actually had the permits approved. So basically, we bought the land cash, sent it to the architect. He put the structure on it, make sure it fits and whatnot, sent it to us for review. We sign off on it, and then he submits it to the city. And then once we're about to get the permits, that's pretty much when we close on the construction loan. So that was the next step from there. And then it was kind of letting the GC know, getting the GC contract in place, making sure, again, at the time, I just pretty much really found one off of Google. Don't do that. Like, just spend the money and actually get a real contract. I'll send someone a contract if you need it. So that wasn't good. But again, I was trying to save as much money as possible, because I was like, I don't know where I'm going to go wrong here. So I need to keep the profit margin. I was being super cheap on those first few. So then once we close on the loan, then kind of hand the plans to the GC. You got the permits. Now it's kind of off to the races.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.